Well, here we are. Happy New Year, Jim.
Happy New Year, Glenn.
Welcome to the Dirt Bag. This is Glenn Andreessen here beside you now until 12 o'clock. Got an hour full of information, and part of that can be your questions. If you have any type of gardening question, we'll be available virtually the whole hour for that. It's time to start thinking about turning a shovel, and I was riding the bike in this morning, and it was warmer outside than in my garage. You know, the temperature changed so quickly that it just feels good to be outside. Of course, I checked the 15-day forecast, and we still have some sub-30 temperatures forecasted anyway. So who knows? In any event, we've got a good show today lined up. We've got, first of all, a discussion, or at least mentioning of the City of Portland's Bureau of Planning and Sustainability's the Urban Growth Bounty classes. And unfortunately, I left my list at home, but I've got a pretty good idea of what they are and what they're all about, and we'll post that whole list on our website, the Dirt Bag, under kbo.fm. You can find it there. We'll list everything that we're maybe talking about today. Then, Jim, just back from just Russia anyway.
Less than 24 hours ago.
Yeah, you said your plane came in at 5 o'clock last night.
Yeah, something like that. And actually, from Ukraine was my, I went down from Ukraine to, I flew from here to Kiev and then took the train to Sochi, Russia, onto the Black Sea, and then sort of reversed that process and came back yesterday.
We'll give it a report from Jim. We've got the new garden stumper. And the answer to last month's garden stumper, we never answered that one. How about that? And we'll talk about some catalog offerings, maybe talk about our favorite catalogs. And, well, I know what Jim's catalog is going to be, but my vegetable catalog anyway. But first of all, we'll start out with Jim and talking about the first event of the year.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned about the weather, so before I go into that, I just want to say, for over the many, many years that I've been farming here in the valley, I used to think that by the 1st of February, we're kind of out of the woods for cold weather, really, really cold weather. Mm-hmm. I mean, I talk about Arctic blasts being cold weather, when we get down into the, you know, below 20 and it stays cold for several days. And then, was it 2 years ago, I think, it was like the middle of February we had one of those, and so I had to readjust my thinking about that. So, you know, it does feel very nice today, but the potential.
We're still in that stretch where the average low and the average high are the same, or not the same, but they've been consistent for now for a week or 10 days. We're at that lowest point now. The average low and at the Portland airport is 34, and the high for the day is 45. No, it's 44.
Yeah.
And so we're still right there, but that'll change in the next day or two, and our daylight now is increasing at both ends of the day.
You know, Glenn, I am really impressed that you have that information so readily available. I mean, that is a sign of somebody's got a great memory, which I can't say.
Well, it's important to us beekeepers, for one. We're always tuned into that, and then growers, too, you know. It makes a difference.
Yeah.
I mean, not that we're going to change the weather, but we can respond to it.
So I'm sure that everybody is going to want to start and go down to Eugene. January 21st, 22nd, and 23rd, the Good Earth Home Show is happening. It's the first garden show of the season. And, you know, it is a time we can start planting. I mean, there's no reason right now we couldn't put plants in the ground. And this show is fun. It's actually a free show, and parking is free.
How about that? Where is it?
At the Lane County Fairgrounds.
There, right? Okay.
You kind of drive right into Eugene, and there it is. And
Free.
And I'm even giving a talk there on Saturday at 1 o'clock, and that's free. I mean, you know, how much better can it get? Just got a carpool, you know, get some folks together and you know, go down on a steak, you know, one of the Saturday or Sunday or Friday. It's Friday evening, I believe. So daytime, both days on Saturday and Sunday. But they have a lot of really nice displays, a lot of stuff oriented around remodeling your house sustainably, and then there's a lot of booths with plants in them, and you know, and it's nice. I mean, it's in a lot of seminars too.
Well, it's nice that this time of year, because the weather outside is probably not going to be really conducive for being outside.
One year I was there, Saturday was great, and it snowed Saturday night, and Sunday was very quiet.
Well, speaking of which, and this is a little out of schedule here, but you said that it's a good time to plant now.
Yes.
Is it a good time to transplant now? I mean, is that one thing that people could be doing if they wanted to transplant blueberries, for example?
Sure. This is the best time to do it. There's a lot of things that we should be thinking about right now, and that is one. I mean, you can plant stuff in the ground, move things around. Things are dormant. It's not going to be a shock to the plants to move them at this time.
What about if – so we got nice 45, 50-degree weather here for the next 4 or 5 days, and then it gets below freezing.
Well, it's not going to hurt the plant because the roots are going to be in the ground. The ground's not going to, you know, get like freeze solid.
So, no, it's unlikely for that to happen this time of year.
And plants won't start growing, and so they won't have new shoots on them. They'll get hurt by frost. So no, this is a perfect time to do it. I mean, and also should mention that if you've got kiwis, this is a really good time to prune, because if you wait until February even, the warmer weather, you won't think it's much warmer, but that little warm, it'll start pushing sap. And when you prune in February, the plants will start to bleed. When some people think that's not a problem, but I don't like it when you see dripping coming out of the end of a wound on a newly pruned
That's kiwi.
Kiwis.
What about grapes? I tend to do that in February.
Yeah. Just,
and it'll bleed too, but I haven't suffered any consequences from that.
Yeah.
But it can be done now too. I just tend to wait for a nicer day.
Yeah, I think if you can go outside and it's not pouring rain, pruning could happen. I mean, if I had the time right now, I'd be out pruning. I mean, and I will be doing that.
Yeah. This is the ideal time for dormant pruning of fruit trees.
Yep. Yep.
Blueberries.
Yeah.
Figs. Kiwi.
Everything. Yeah. It's not a time when you're going to push things into growth. I think you mentioned in the last show, you know, there are some concerns with some plants of like some of the prunus, peaches and so forth. I might wait on those. Because the closer to when growth starts on those, it's going to be faster. They're going to heal their wounds and be less susceptible to disease.
Yeah, and as our colleague Ted Swenson mentioned years ago, that he tends to prune his prunes and plums, nectarines, even after they've started blooming, even so you can see the blossoms, because we're going to be taking off about 2/3 of the new growth of the peaches and nectarines in any event, and doesn't seem to hurt it at all. And they tend to grow so much anyway that plums.
Well, there's a funny – I wrote an article a while back, and I titled it, "I'd Rather Be Pruning," which to sort of counteract the little bumper stickers that say, "I'd rather be skiing." You know?
Yeah.
Like, you don't think of pruning as a winter sport, but it actually is good exercise. You get a lot of upper body action, you know, reaching over your head and stuff, and not too much, you usually don't get a lot of heartbeat from it, but it's a good thing to do.
And we should point out here that the difference between summer pruning, or winter pruning, dormant pruning, and summer pruning, what I recommend is if your fruit tree is at the size that you want it to be, that you prune in the summer. Mm-hmm. But if you're just getting onto that schedule, I wouldn't wait until summer to prune. I'd prune now and then again in the summer, rather than going 18 months between prunings.
Yes. And I think another important thing to think about, a lot of people may have older trees that are pretty dense and overgrown and stuff, and thinning out that old wood, it's really important, and this is a good time to do it, just to get the sort of rejuvenate the tree.
Yeah.
So then you can start on a regular pruning schedule.
If it's an old, out of control apple tree or pear tree or whatever, I would not, and you want to kind of whip it back into shape, I wouldn't do it all in 1 year.
Right. Right.
Maybe a 3-year program.
Yeah. Start. You know.
Yes. Well, they say, yeah. The second best time is today.
That's right. Best time was 20 years ago.
That's right.
Exactly.
And Jim, I'll run this idea that I have had about pruning just kind of as a rule of thumb. And that would be how much to take off of a standard tree. And maybe it would be like no more than 12 total inches, total diameter inches. So that might mean 1 6-inch branch and 2 3-inch branches. Just kind of a because otherwise the tree responds to your pruning cuts by just putting out oodles of new growth, you know, water shoots, water sprouts, whatever you want to call
them. Right.
And you're fighting genetics that whole time. And if you do it all at once, they're going to say, oh, boy, I'm not as big as I want to be.
Sure. You know, another thing, a lot of interesting ideas about pruning. And I think for people who are just beginning to do this, the first thing I would do is go just look at your tree. And if its tree isn't really big, you'll be able to see like crossing branches, things that shouldn't just be there. I mean, you can take those out. And that's just the first sort of step. Just take a look at it and try to make sure that all the branches that are there have some place to grow. You know, if they're crossing, if they're broken,
you know, rubbing,
yeah. You know, get those off there because they're really not going to help in the future.
Of course, there is that line of thought that the best time to prune is when your pruners are sharp. You know, that it's more important to have sharp pruners so you're not mangling the cambium layer and rather than when.
That's right. Well,
but take that with a grain of salt.
And also, when you prune off a branch, don't prune really flush to the stem.
Right.
Leave that little collar there so it'll grow back over that cut.
That's right. And, are you giving any talks on pruning?
No, but the Home Orchard Society.
That's right. They will be doing
on
that.
Yeah. In fact, they're coming up in February, I believe.
Yeah, it's usually towards the end of
February 5th.
Oh, well, pruning. Yeah,
they should get
on
this
earlier.
That's
yeah.
right. They can go. The Home Orchard Society has a website, www.homeorchardsociety.org, where people can get information about the classes that are being put on. And so, February 5th is should mention this. Good thing to mention this is pruning, and then. This is at Clackamas Community College, and then on February 9th, they have a class on grafting. So those are both, you know, useful classes for people.
Indeed. And I believe they would register for those through Clackamas Community College, but you can find the information out on the homeorchardsociety.org website.
That's right. I actually do have that information here, too.
The
phone number at Clackamas Community College to call to register is...
Oh, well, do it.
And everybody has their pencil out, I'm sure, or pen as it may be, 503-657-6958. And the extension is 2246.
Okay. That's that. Okay, the Urban Growth Bounty classes, we'll come back to that. We'll get these phone calls taken care of, or at least phone call taken care of, and then we'll talk about some of these Urban Growth Bounty classes. Okay, Paul, you're first. Paul couldn't wait. Oh, I see. Kay. Okay, Kay.
Hi.
You're up.
I'm calling to ask about reviving a very old blueberry patch. Like, these plants are taller than me. They're probably over 60 years old and haven't had much pruning.
Are they still producing?
Yes.
Good. Yeah, they're...
And I'm getting over a fungal infection mumberry. It's getting much better.
Did you do something to treat that, or are you just doing it?
I cut out... There's more light and air in the patch now than there used to be.
What is,
and I did some mulching.
Jim, mummy berry?
I know of it, but it's not something I've really had to deal with. But I think that Kay can also relate. I mean, it basically the berries just kind of shrivel up and become dried up, unpalatable, inedible berries.
Yes, they look fine at the beginning, and then some of them mature, and the rest just shrivel up.
Yeah. Well...
But what I'm actually calling about is more the pruning of the old, very, very old plants and how to approach that and what would be the best mulch.
Well, I'll talk about the pruning part. Jim will talk about the mulch part.
Okay.
Blueberries are most productive on branches that are 3 to 5 years old. So while you don't have any 60-year-old branches there, you may have some pretty old branches. And so what I would recommend doing is getting on a program of taking out is it just kind of a thicket?
Yes.
I would take out in your case, probably 3 or 4 or 5 of the oldest branches, the biggest branches that are in the middle, probably. And they'll have lichen growing on them. They'll be gray in color and whatnot. Just get what we call a keyhole saw or any type of a saw, a keyhole saw, that has a very small point to begin with, or a very narrow, so you can get in there and cut low as possible.
Right.
If you had loppers, that would work too, but that's pretty hard wood. So I have much better luck sawing through them.
Okay.
Down there. And just, so like I said, take out 3, 4, 5 of those oldest branches and or limbs, we'll say. And really, I don't know that you need to do much pruning at the ends of the branches. That's where the fruit production is going to be anyway. If they're too tall, then you'll certainly have to do that. But blueberries bloom on last year's growth. So they just keep getting taller and taller. And me, who's taller than average, I like them when they're that tall because it makes it easier to pick. But that's not for everybody. So that's the easiest way that I recommend it. And then that'll
okay, just
that'll
get down
and
cut them off as low as you can, the oldest branches, but not more than 5 or 6.
Yeah, not more than 20% of the branches. And if
okay,
you do 20%. That, if you do that every year, then you can understand that you'll have new branches every 5 years.
Right.
And that's what we want, because the branches lose their higher productivity after 5 years, like I said.
And after, when they you get new growth, will that be coming from the outer part of the thicket, or will you also get some from the inside too?
Both.
When
you cut off those branches, it'll spur new growth to come up then. And if they're small, if they're smaller than a pencil, say, I'd cut those out too with your pruners. Just leave the bigger ones.
Okay.
Okay, and mulch.
Yeah, and with mulch. Basically, as you probably know, I mean, the blueberries like acidic soil. They like the pH that somewhere between 4.5 and probably 5 would be the highest even for it. So,
which is quite low.
Which is quite low.
Yeah, vegetables would prefer about 6.2 or something.
Right. So typically what people use is fir sawdust. That's the sort of standard mulch that's acidic. It's an acidic mulch. It's very available. It's cheap. And it's something that we have around here. So if you go out and look at commercial blueberry patches, you'll see plants surrounded with fir sawdust, and that's what I would recommend using.
Okay.
And then about the first week of March, April, and May, scratch in a little bit of organic fertilizer into that mulch, because you're not going to be digging that mulch in.
No.
But it still needs a little bit of fertilizer, and I think that'll help your fruit production too if you haven't been doing that.
Or you could just put down some organic fertilizer and then put the mulch over the top of it.
But I like the multiple applications there of organic fertilizer. Uh-huh. But it's my preference.
Okay. Sure. Okay. Well, thank you guys very much.
You're welcome.
Sure.
Take care.
You bet.
Bye.
I don't know. Let's see if we should go on with the Urban Growth Bounty or if we're going to take another call. Oh, Paul, you've come back to us.
Yeah, I had a customer came in, which only happens about once a week. So.
Boy, you sure got to hang up for that then.
Yeah, really. Well, I've got a couple of questions. You answered one earlier about now would be a good time because I want to move my blueberries. But I bought a little book about the blueberries from your store when we bought the blueberries. Mm-hmm. And I had a little disagreement with my helper here. Because it doesn't say to raise the blueberries as high as the local growers do. I live on the Abiquaud, and I'm used to being out here amongst all these blueberry places. And so we have well drained soil, but it's flat. And so we planted them fairly even with the ground surface. And I'm wondering if we should raise those up more like the local planters do.
What do you mean? Raise them up? Soil level, or the planting level, or the height of the
plant? The plant when we plant them, because if you look at what the big commercial growers do, the plant is well above the ground, and they've got a berm of sawdust that's maybe a foot high.
Okay.
Yeah, I think there's people that do plant them in that it's sort of like they'll build up the soil a little bit and
a raised bed type of mounded.
I don't but I've seen others do it just right at the soil level too. I don't think it's important to bring it up like that. I think that if your soil is well drained, you're okay planting it at the soil surface.
Okay.
And a lot of my observations and comments come as a result of a blueberry farm that I rent honeybees to, just a small guy, 5 acres. And it looks kind of like his are raised because he's got the sawdust mulch there, but it's just the mulch that's raised.
Yeah, well, I worked right out in this area, and when they do plant these, they have a big machine, and they build a hump that, you know, the soil is most of a foot high, and then they mulch on top of that. So, I mean, they really raise them up, and I've wondered why, because I know some of these guys, and they say, well, that's the way you do it. But the little book we bought from One Green World there, they'd say, no, you plant them pretty much at ground. You know, they say to plant about the crown, about an inch above the soil level, and then heap it up. And so I was just wondering about that. Then I had another question. I've just finished my pruning my apples, and this problem is not new, but we have one really old apple tree, and I was up working on it this year, and the bark on the top level of the limbs is coming off, and there are bugs under there. But I had one piece that the bark was probably 3 inches wide and 12, 14 inches long, and it's just coming off. And there's wood underneath. This is a new experience for me.
I experienced that on an old pear tree of mine. I tend not to worry about it as long as the wood is still productive. And at any time you can cut that off, you'll have to be prepared for the water shoots that come out then nearby.
Well, this is happening on some of the biggest limbs up high on the tree, and so it's getting to be pretty common, and the tree seems pretty healthy. Mm-hmm. It just has these areas, and the ones that are 2 or 3 years old, it's just hardened up, you know, and you can see how the sapwood is hardened at the edge of these places, and it's still going along, but it's new to me. So,
Jim, you have a comment?
Well, are you talking about this is just bark, sort of surface bark peeling off, but the cambium layer underneath is live wood, or are we talking about where it's actually a part of the tree, a canker or something that's died on the branch?
Well, it's not really like a canker, but it's a long strip, just the upper surface of the branch, and when the bark comes off, you can see some of the cambium material that still seems to be live, and then later on the older ones, it's all hardened up.
But it's still alive, though. The branch is still alive?
Yeah, and I wonder if the bugs burrowed under there and destroyed the connection of the bark.
It's the other way around. They came in because it was...
They had a space, a spot that they could get some protection from, bugs and so forth. Cool. Love those sort of spots.
Yeah, I have a quince tree its days are numbered now anyway, but it's decades old, scores old. I mean, I wouldn't doubt if it's 70 or 80 years old.
Yeah, and this tree is really old.
Yeah, well, they don't last forever.
That's true.
So might be time to think about a replacement tree of smaller rootstock.
We have several smaller, the dwarfs and semi-dwarfs, and this is a big old tree.
Yeah.
It's not a very good tree because it's kind of like a cross between a transparent and a yellow delicious.
Oh, boy, those are about two of the bland.
but I don't think there's anything we can do about this problem, so that's
no, and I don't think there's anything that you need to do either. So.
Okay, well, that's my question.
All right.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Good gardening. All right, well, we'll see what Kurt has to say to us. He's busy in there doing all sorts of stuff. We've got him wrapped around there. Okay, Roberta, we'll fit you in, and then we'll go to the garden stumper.
Okay.
You're first.
Hello.
You're on, Roberta. How you doing?
Hi, I'm doing well. I want to ask when you should cut off from your existing tree branches that you want to graft onto a root next spring, in the spring.
Yes, right now.
Yeah.
The wood to take off is the young last year's wood. So you want to be sure to, you know, usually if it's an older tree, you're going to look toward the top part of the tree. You might have some shoots coming up inside it as well, but you want to use wood that's just last year's growth and has fairly pencil size, and it's, you know, fairly something, if you can find it, something fairly vigorous that's grown maybe a couple of feet long. This makes the best wood for grafting.
But not a water chute.
You can use water chutes.
Oh, okay.
Sure.
Because I think I've heard that it's better to stay away for those, away from those. No. I'm mistaken. It was that those will eventually produce fruit, but it'll take a while.
Okay, when I did this last year, they said to take the lateral ones, the ones that go out sideways rather than from the top, rather than the ones going straight up.
I think the ones growing straight up or going upward are going to normally be your better wood because they're going to be the more vigorous shoots. If you have something going sideways that is 1 year wood, you can use that too. But usually when you start getting into lateral wood, you're talking about fruiting wood that's going to have more flower buds on it and less of vegetative buds.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, thank you very
Jim's
much.
Jim's the man here, so I'd listen to what he says.
And then the other thing is proper storage of it.
Yeah, that's
one big mistake that people make is to wrap things up in like really, really wet paper. What I do is I just put those pieces of wood in a plastic, a well-sealed plastic bag, mm-hmm. and just take my fingers with a little bit of water from the tap and just toss some water in that bag.
And can I like put it in the back of my garage, or do I have to put it in a refrigerator or something like that?
Put it in your refrigerator.
Yeah. Because these pieces of wood, the scion wood, S-C-I-O-N, wood, mm-hmm. Are not going to be long. I mean, they might be 18 inches at max. And you can cut them so they're the size that you want them to be.
Yeah, you can cut them to 6 inches long if you want, as long as you got some buds on there.
Yeah, I'd say, you want at least two buds.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so I can cut longer ones and then maybe when I'm ready to do the graft, prune them down to shorter.
Well, sure. Or when you're ready to store them, if you don't have room for that big of a branch in your fridge in
a
sack.
Yeah, I will if I lay them sideways.
You got a sack that big? Yeah,
garbage
sack.
Do I have to have the whole thing in a plastic
yes,
bag?
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Yes. Yes. You don't want them drying out.
Okay.
And then the other piece of advice is that if you are or when you're cutting these, when you know which way is up on the branch, mm-hmm. The bottom should have a flat cut and the upper part should have an angled cut so that there's no confusion later on of which way is up.
Boy, you lost me there.
Well, because when you're going to graft, mm-hmm. you don't want to graft that scion wood piece on upside down.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. you laugh now. Maybe you realize what. But sometimes it's hard to tell when the buds are very small or haven't started swelling.
Okay.
So that's just the rule of thumb. Flat on the bottom, angled at the top.
Very good.
All right.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Bye.
Okay, Kurt, let's do it. You know what time it is? Okay, first of all, we will answer last month's garden stumper question. And Jim, if you remember, this was last year. No, Jim doesn't remember at all.
Don't remember this thing.
That is, what is Jory? J-O-R-Y. J-O-R-Y. What is Jory? We'll just tell you here. Nobody called in last
it's Joy month. Without an R. With
well,
an R.
Yeah. But you'd say in the... Yeah, I won't go into that.
Yeah.
Okay, what it is Oregon's state soil. How about that? It's found in the foothills surrounding the Willamette Valley, but it's one of about 2,000 types of soils, different soils that have been identified in Oregon. So,
do you have any idea what particular quality of Jory made it Oregon state soil?
No, I don't. Can you tell us?
No.
Okay.
Actually, I don't think it's one of our best soils, but... Yeah,
one
maybe.
Never knows. No, I'll try to find out that. So
I can see the massive panel that was assembled to make this decision and the kind of debate that must have gone on.
Well, sometimes you get school kids that will petition the legislature to make – they did this in the last year or two to make something, the razor clam, the state clam
state
or something.
Clam.
Or,
well,
I don't know what it was that they did, but you get these things. I can't imagine them doing that for soil.
It just seems...
Oh, that's a nice Jory soil you got there. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Willamette. You've probably heard of Willamette soil.
Yeah.
I mean, that is, to me, the creme de la creme of dirt because it just goes... You can't find the bottom of it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like very, very deep. And
do you happen to have that?
No.
Oh.
I wish.
Okay, a little special music here to get us into our next question here. Okay. So today's Garden Stumper question is, give us a call if you know the answer to this. 503-231-8187, I believe, is the number to call. The question is, how many USDA cold hardiness zones does Oregon have? How many cold hardiness zones does Oregon have? So we're in roughly zone 8 here.
Yeah, the valley is probably zone 7. I mean, we like to think I like to hope for 8.
Yeah.
But 7 seems
so
to
show higher the higher the number, the warmer the low temperatures are. So so how many zones does Oregon have? That's all we need there. Okay, Kurt, do we have another caller? None. Okay. Well, then I can talk about the classes from the Urban Growth Bounty. I think this is in their third year now or so of offering these classes. And once again, I apologize, but I'll have all the information on how to register for these classes and costs and where they're held and when. But they start next month and they go through the whole year. And they're broken down into different types of gardening ones, of raising either chickens or bees or goats, to cheese making. They have a series this year. Will Newman is doing them on tools. I thought, well, that's an interesting way. And he's doing some classes on soils. Mm-hmm. We should have Will on here one of these days. He hasn't been on for several years now, but he's a good talk.
Mm-hmm.
And very knowledgeable guy and entertaining too. Okay. So that's why he fits in around here. So Oregon Tilth will be offering they started last year and doing a series of gardening classes. I don't remember, recall now. I think it's 3 or 4, maybe monthly classes starting in February or March. There's going to be a class this year on permaculture. Jen Aaron is going to be doing that. I've had a few encounters with Jen. Very knowledgeable person there, too. I'll be doing a class on fruit growing. Jim is generally involved with that. And I'll be doing a couple of classes on beekeeping, both beginning backyard organic beekeeping and second year beekeeping. Big learning curve there. See, Naomi Montaker of at Naomi's Organic Farm Supply will be doing classes on chickens, goats. There was one other name there too in her menagerie, but she'll be talking about raising those in the city. And I don't have it in my mind who's doing the cheese making, but there will be cheese making classes again this year too. So
that's great.
Once again, I'll have the information on how to register all this posted at our website, but you can always just do a search for Urban Growth Bounty classes 2011 and it'll take you right there. There's probably 20 or 25 classes that are happening. So if you've got any interest on learning some of those things, then that's a good place to begin.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
Okay. With no further questions and no answers to the Garden Stumper of how many zones there are in Oregon. Now, this kind of surprised me, too. I'll just talk about this a little bit as I was researching this a little bit, that we actually have, as a hint here, there actually is quite a bit of Zone 9 in Oregon. You have any ideas where that might be? Zone 9 is really the top.
Yeah, I would guess Brookings.
That's it. Yeah, that's it. Very good, Jim.
That's hard to believe, though.
Southern Oregon coast there.
Yeah.
And the, when I say here, Zone 9, they say that low temperatures will never get below 20 to 25.
Yeah. 20 is the sort of official border for Zone 9.
And they're kind of, these zones are kind of changing a little bit with the climate change.
Yeah. I remember, just interesting, I had a lot of history with Brookings because my grandfather had a cabin or a house on the beach there. And uh-huh. As a little kid, I used to go down there and have some really fond memories of that place. But I don't know what it was, in the 70s there was a freeze that actually got down to below 20. It was enough to kill the eucalyptus that was growing along Highway 101.
Uh-huh.
But it was very rare, obviously, to get that cold. But
yeah, they do have microclimates down there, and generally, when we're 45 here, they might reach 70. sometimes because the wind's coming down off the mountain and warms up, heats up as it heads down there.
It's a remarkable place.
And then on the other end, of course, we have Burns, which has been 25 below.
40.
I mean, just in the last week.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, Meacham, I think, is there in the Blue Mountains. That I think the all-time low is, well, maybe Ukiah, minus 54, I think, was there, but for the state of Oregon.
Yeah, that's amazing, isn't it? I mean, right. This state has a great variability in temperature, potential temperature.
That's right. Okay, well, we've got, I guess we've got two questions here. We'll get these in, and then we'll get a travel log in from John. You're on.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Great. Hey, I'm listening here, and wanted to ask a question about. I've got a cherry tree in my backyard, like a 5-on-1, and also an apple tree in my backyard, right here in the middle of Portland. But the wife likes to grow roses around it, and the skin. I guess you called them water shoots earlier. Is those that like creep along the ground and come up?
Yeah, they can, particularly on the on some fruits more than others, not necessarily on apples and pears. They'll come up on the tree, but some like prunes and plums and cherries, they'll send out suckers from the roots.
Right. When I dig a another hole for her roses out there, I can see these coming from the tree. And I'm concerned with using a systemic on the roses as a fertilizer. Will that go into the fruit of the apples? And not that I get any, because the squirrels eat everything.
Yeah. Well, they probably would. The question is, would an inorganic systemic fertilizer affect the fruit, I mean, in a harmful way?
Correct. That's very good. Yeah.
Jim says no. If you're using a systemic fungicide or something like that, I would say don't use it on the roses.
So go ahead and fertilize the roses with a systemic fertilizer.
Well, okay, you won't have organic fruit, obviously,
right,
because you're going to have artificial fertilizer.
Oh, yeah,
that's
there you
gonna,
go. Okay.
And you can get by on the roses without using the inorganic systemic fertilizer by scratching it into the surface of the soil or trying maybe compost tea.
Yeah, organic fertilizers you can get should do just as well as the inorganic.
That's right. By spraying it onto the leaves like a fish oil or something.
Or you can get blends of different things like blood meal, bone meal, and so forth that you can apply. It will give you
foliarly.
No.
Okay, is that how you are applying your inorganic fertilizer systemically? Is that how you
actually just scratching it into the ground?
Oh, okay. Well, then that's not really what we would. Well, I guess we'd call it systemic. A systemic generally is it.
Yeah. It's got the it says on its fertilizer with the systemic for the aphids and stuff.
We have a different story here.
Yes, right.
The danger of what you're doing is you are actually putting that poison into the system, the vascular system of the plant. So when that aphid eats the plant, tries to bite it, it will die. So now you are talking about something that could go into your fruit.
Oh, okay.
I mean, maybe it wouldn't be very highly concentrated because the tree is much bigger than a rose plant, but that would be something I'd be concerned about.
Okay. I would, too.
I'm going to take all the systemic fertilizer away from her then.
Yes.
Yeah, there's two separate things. One is the fertilizer itself, and then the other is the systemic pesticide that's going into the tree or the plant.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Well, thanks.
You bet.
Okay. Bye.
One more caller. Bruce, you're on the air.
Oh, yeah, just calling. Did anybody give the answer for the climate zone?
No, not yet.
Oh, okay. Are you looking for Western Oregon or all
of Oregon? The whole state.
Oh, the whole state?
Yep.
7.
Well, I've counted 6.
Okay. Well, I'm looking at my Sunset Garden book. And I'm looking at on Western Oregon, there's 1, 3, 5, 6, 7, 17, and then I went to...
Well, that's a different zone. That's Sunset has a different zone. This is USDA.
Oh, USDA.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And then I flipped to the other side for Eastern Oregon.
Right. Yeah, they have a much more...
Zones 1, 2, 3. So you wanted the USDA.
Right. The ones that everybody can compare easily. So, well, anyway, that's the answer is 6.
Uh-huh.
And you know, I'm slightly, I might disagree with that slightly.
Well,
if you're looking at temperatures and you say, okay, if we have zone 9, then we obviously have have 8, 7, 6, 5, 4.
That's right.
Three.
Well, three.
And then I would think if you get down into 40, you're talking about zone two.
Well, zone four is that typically it will not get lower than minus 30 to minus 25. There's not many parts of Oregon that do that on a regular basis.
Well, now, USDA normally, you know, is 10 degree differences. So you go like zone
well,
seven.
Well, this is from the website that I consulted today.
Well,
I just wrote
there's
it down.
Zone, there's B's and A's.
Yes.
But if the whole number itself has always, in my experience, been 10 degree differences. So so 0 to 10 would be zone 7. 10 to 20 is zone 8. 20 to 30 is zone 9. So maybe we should do a little more investigation. Check this out a little bit further.
Yeah,
so we'll get back to this.
Yeah, that's right. And like I said, and the temperatures now are shifting because of climate change. So,
right.
One more question, and then Jim, you're on. Greg, you're up.
Hey, I'm not sure if this is your area of expertise, but I was interested in finding out what might be the best crop to throw in, like an anaerobic digester that would be able to be a good cover crop. It wouldn't need pesticides, replenishes the soil, has a big yield, maybe grow year-round or something like that.
So you would grow it outside, and then you would put it into this Japanese method of composting?
Make biogas. You make biogas. You make methane mostly.
And are you currently doing this? The answer to my question, to answer your question as well, I don't know what exactly would be the best thing to put in that. The question is, I'm interested in why you're doing the anaerobic composting.
Making methane. You use it for energy.
Yeah.
And then also tap off the CO2 content to grow more plants better.
Uh-huh.
And then pour what's left over back in the ground as fertilizer.
You do this in a greenhouse area?
Well, no, not necessarily, but wherever, anything that you want fertilized.
Well, I meant the CO2.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, an enclosed kind of thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, just off the top of my head, and I don't know, I think it'd be more a function of the actual composter, the digester, rather than the feedstock that you're putting in. But the other thing is that you need to have something that survives our winters here.
Right.
So,
and then also doesn't require pesticides. Fertilizer.
Well, hardly any of our winter crops, winter cover crops, you don't have to treat those. I've never heard of any problems with that. I mean, maybe mice will eat something. But,
yeah, what's a big yield type crop?
Rye. Probably annual rye is probably the biggest biomass producer. Plus, they've got great root structure. Mm-hmm. It's not a legume, but you're not necessarily worried about nitrogen production.
No.
For that, so.
No, we just don't want too much fiber, really.
Well, then you might try crimson clover, something like that, because rye would tend to have a little bit more, I would think, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Certainly out of our expertise here, but
okay.
We've got opinions, though.
Yeah, I mean, everyone has, stuff to throw in the compost, so it's just a different way to do it,
Yeah.
So,
right.
All right. Thanks, Mark.
You bet.
Bye.
Okay, Kurt, can we take just a little musical break here, and then we'll get Jim into... where you've been, what you've been doing, what you've found.
An all too. When it comes and lesson or two.
Oh, we've offered up a lesson or two. That's Portland's own Monty Edmondson, formerly of the Blue Binos.
You just know so much about music.
Yeah, well, apparently we don't know much about Clackamas Community College phone system there. The number that you had apparently has been changed.
Huh.
So if you call the number that Jim mentioned earlier in the program, that's not going to be good. But we'll have the information on how to register for the Home Orchard Society on our website in the next day or three.
And we'll put it on our Wingbeam World website as well.
Okay. So. There'd be no shortage of that. So you've been traveling.
Yeah. I went to Ukraine and then down to Sochi in Russia. And this was an interesting trip because I usually go there and bring back backpacks full of seed, but I didn't need to do that this time. So it was a little bit lighter on my back, which was nice. And I enjoyed my getting back into Russian and my remembering the words that I've forgotten while I wasn't speaking it. And meeting all my friends again. It was really a nice trip, actually, nice to see folks. The couple of impressions that I got, one is that in Ukraine, they were having a real winter, so there was snow and it was cold and it wasn't like, time to go out and look at the botanic gardens and things. But in Sochi is a subtropical climate, and when I got down there, they hadn't even had a frost.
Oh, man.
So they had bananas, the hardy bananas out growing full and oranges and things.
Speaking of zones, yes.
Yeah, they were definitely warm. It's beautiful. But I've also was – and then one of the things about Sochi that intrigues me is that they have these tea plantations. And so I was just struck by that. I mean, it's really fun to go someplace where tea is produced and it's not an area where most people would think. But they've sort of revived the industry that was in place before the Soviet Union collapsed. And now they're manufacturing tea and marketing it, and I brought back a whole bunch of different kinds and some more information about making it ourselves, and will be a recipe soon on our site that I've just translated from Russian about how to do that. But it's fun, and we can grow our own tea right here in Oregon and just drink to our heart's content. but one thing about Sochi that was fascinating to me and somewhat sad or frustrating, actually made me angry, was the destruction of the environment that's going on there because of the Olympics in 2014. And it made me think, one, do we really want this kind of Olympic scene? Because it's gotten a lot of bad press lately about what happens to communities when the Olympics come. It's not all fun and games. And what's happening down there, this is just rural area where I'm not sure they're even going to have snow. I mean, this is a subtropical area. The Olympics are supposed to occur up in the mountains, but right now they don't have snow in the mountains. And they're planning on making it apparently somehow, which is pretty crazy. But I visited an experiment station that I've known for years, which had a wonderful collection of subtropical fruits, including pineapple, guavas, figs. It had a collection of filberts, jujubes. All of this has been destroyed, and they're now building buildings or houses and so forth.
Bulldozed it.
Just bulldozed it up, and there's piles of brush, which is just – and my friends down there were just depressed about this. It was like, and we talked about it. It's a crime. It was really, really frustrating to see it. And
so this was government-owned land to begin.
Government-owned land, an experiment station. They've just sort of given up on agriculture in that particular area now, it seems like. They're disinvesting in it. They're probably going to close this station down, which is just a real tragedy because it's a beautiful place, a wonderful place to grow things. So, and then a couple of other things that I noticed. One, the police are thick as fleas there. They do a funny thing, which we're not familiar with, where they stand on the street corners. Like, if you imagine driving down Broadway in Portland and having police on every other corner, a little thicket of them, just with a wand just to wave you over if they see any possible suspicion that you might, be doing something wrong, like, kissing your wife while you're driving or something. And so my friend got pulled over. We were driving together, and they had changed the painting of the stripe in the street. And he got pulled over by one of these guys, $150. And, of course, the money this is not a paper ticket where you send into some place. The money is given right then to the police, and you can imagine where it's going. It's not – it's the corruption is really also endemic there. So it's going to be a big surprise to people coming from other countries to come to this area for the Olympics and expect what we normally think of as kind of like a civilized scene. The roads are full of cars. they've got to do a lot to make this something that's going to work. But anyway, the part of my friends there who do the fruit work are, they're excited about what they do. They're very knowledgeable people. It's like I said, the tea part of Sochi in that area is really fun to see. And
so, are you going to have, or do you already have these teas available in the catalog?
We have plants from there.
That
we've brought, and they're the hardiest tea in the world. And really, I mean, that's where they. This is the same, basically, parallel latitude as we are. It's about 43 degrees north, so it's very close to us.
All right. So. Well, speaking of catalogs.
Yes.
And thank you for your travels. Sorry we're running out of time here.
Yeah, sure.
I'll just mention a couple of my favorite catalogs that I use mostly now, and there's gazillions of them, and even more local ones than I use. I mean, heck, the one that I use probably the most is the least local, which is Fedco out of Maine, but it's a cooperative of organic growers, mostly organic growers, and I really like their business philosophy, and I like co-ops in general, and their service is great, prices are great, and so that's what I use mostly for vegetable seeds, Fedco. Territorial, right here in Oregon, also a wide variety, and I see you brought in Nichols Garden Catalog there. We had Rosemary Nichols on last summer, I think.
Yeah, and Nichols is an interesting company to me because it's been around for a long time. I remember going down to Nichols in probably 1965 and buying seeds. It's the only like sort of old family seed business that I know of in Oregon. There may be others, but I don't know of them.
Not old ones. I think there's newer ones.
Yes, you know. Definitely. Uh-huh. Definitely. It's interesting. I thought about this a little bit, Glenn, about how Territorial, Rain Tree Nursery, Burnt Ridge Nursery, myself, a couple of others, back in the late 70s, early 80s, all kind of came into existence. An interest in moving back to the land and all of that sort of brought out folks who wanted to do seeds and plants. And so we have these local companies, which, you know, I think it's nice to support them. You know, the Nichols, Territorial,
and
all these guys.
Seeds, you know, many of them are grown here. So we know that they will live here.
When you get plants from a local nursery, you know that the plants have had they've been tested here. So you get some reliability.
Well, Jim, we've run out of time.
It's a good show. Thanks for all the callers.
Sorry we didn't get to the last caller or callers in any event, but we'll be back in a month.
Yeah, I look forward to it.
Second Wednesday.
Spring will be around the corner, if not here already by then. So.
Well, we'll be in high speaking mode at that time. Jim and I will both be at the Home Garden, the Yard Garden and Patio Show. We'll be at the Better Living Show in March.
There's a Home and Garden Show, too.
Yeah, lots of stuff.
Yep.
We're cranking her up.
Yep.
Okay. This is Glenn Andreessen. Jim Gilbert, thanks for coming back.
Good to be here. See you again.